This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Ring the bell. We've done it again. Golden Oak Lending has lowered rates to 4.875 fixed. Lower your monthly payment, get cash out, pay off credit cards, and best of all, make no mortgage payments for 2 months. Lock in this incredible 4.875 rate and get your cash in as little as 14 days. Visit goldenoaklending.com today.
Golden Oak Lending cured my blues.
5.81 APR, FHA, 15-year, 20% equity qualified credit. Additional terms apply. NMLS 114937.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Coming up at 6 o'clock, Take Command discusses Josh Connerly through a different lens than you've heard him discussed before. It's 5:30, though, on a Thursday here on The Hoffman Show, and that means it is time for one of our favorite segments of the week, a segment where we throw caution to the wind, put our hazmat suits on, and dive into the deepest, darkest parts of the internet, the comments section.
We tried to warn them. They didn't listen.
Yes!
Every week, the Hoffman Show goes into the belly of the beast.
We read those comments, baby!
Never read the comments.
This here live radio show on the Team 980 gets cut up into bite-sized pieces and distributed on our on-demand platforms, including on YouTube at the Team 980 and at Craig Hoffman, where most of these comments come from. And you can leave your comments on any part of our show. We'll read them. And then the best ones, the most intriguing ones, the ones that make us laugh, the ones that make us think, those wind up here. I almost went full Jimmy V, laugh, think, cry, Anthony, but I haven't had to cry from a comment in a while.
Crying is a little...
It'd be an intense reaction.
Yeah.
Yeah. What?
Nothing.
Thanks for your contributions.
Yeah.
All right. We not me and you, Anthony, Logan and I, on Take Command earlier in the week, did a couple of mailbag questions, one involving Luke McCaffrey and separation data, and one that basically was like, why does PFF hate John Bates when Logan and all the football nerds love John Bates? And we got a lot of commentary on this. And basically, the summarization is, we got a whole bunch of nerds that like us a whole lot. All you out there, you're giant nerds, and we love you for it. Constantine, DI8XF, says, great stuff, guys. You know your market. I can tell you for a fact my buds and I have been wondering about these advanced metrics for a while, especially pertaining to Luke McCaffrey. Nerd. Farbod21, I love when Logan goes full professor mode. Nerd. I did not make fun of Logan. I pointed out in a bit of jest that, Logan loves this topic, the John Bates topic, because that's what Logan was. He was a blocking tight end. Like, he has such an appreciation, and all joking aside, he has such an appreciation for the dirty work and how hard some of the things that they asked John Bates to do are as a tight end. Getting out there, blocking a defensive end, a one-on-one in the run game. You're out there on outside zone, and Logan's like, oh, you got to get your helmet screws on his helmet, and they got to be in the Goldilocks sweet spot. It's full professor mode, but it's also like full tight end mode. And I was like, it's really nuanced. It's really valuable to teams, but like, it's not as valuable as being an awesome pass catcher, as evidenced by the fact that, like, look how much money Travis Kelce made versus Logan Paulson made. And he's like, yeah. I was like, but, you know, it also helps the podcast. I think their podcast makes a little bit more than ours. And Stero Sahiro says, Logan, I enjoy your podcast more than any Kelce podcast. Boom! Take that, New Heights. you can sign a $100 million deal with Amazon. We don't want any of that.
That was a lie.
I would take the paycheck. We wouldn't change our show. We just want that money. Want that paper. Buddy Barlow. Dude, I could listen to and watch this content all day, every day. One more for you too, buddy.
Nerd.
But we appreciate it because we know there's a lot of football nerds out there, and we are certainly amongst them, and we are here to serve the nerds. In terms of actually the service, Anthony, let's get into some content. And we had McShay on yesterday, and Renji26 responded to part of the Todd McShay conversation because Todd was implying that he thinks Connerly could play guard this year and trying to figure out, like, okay, you know, he was a left tackle at Oregon. Clearly, Laremy Tunsil is your left tackle. So where does that leave Josh Connerly? Oh, it would make sense if you play left guard, right? Well, I pointed out to Todd, a lot of people around here think he's going to play right tackle. And Renji26 says, why are there parties that keep thinking Connerly Jr. is going to guard? And I wanted to bring this up because I think it's worth double-clicking on the fact that Josh Connerly could very well play guard for this team. Right tackle is a three-person competition. Okay, this is not a foregone conclusion that Josh Connerly is just moving to right guard or right tackle, and Andrew Wiley is going to be a backup or not on the team or playing guard, and Brandon Coleman's playing left guard. That's not how this goes. And I know this is hard for people to like process, and I'm not saying it's not going to pan out that way, where Wiley is the swing tackle, or maybe even starting at right guard with Cosmi hurt and Coleman's left guard and Connerly's right tackle. And I think, to be fair, that's the best version of this. I think the best version of their line is literally that, is that Andrew Wiley, with his athleticism and mobility, wins the temporary right guard spot over Nate Herbig, over Nick Allegretti, that he is the best of that bunch. Coleman wins out the left guard spot over Allegretti and Herbig and Wiley. Biadasz is at center, Tunsil's at left tackle, and then Josh Connerly beats everyone else out at right tackle on the merits and is the best guy and is ready to play. He doesn't have any problem switching sides. That's the best version of how this plays out because it's also a version that can work for them long term, because then you just pop Cosmi in for Wiley at right guard, and now you've got great depth inside with Allegretti as a swing guard center, behind Wiley as a swing guard, and Herbig, if he even at that point makes the team, is another guard. Like, you have a ton of guys who have played a ton of football, and you have multiple options at tackle where Wiley could kick outside, Coleman could play left or right. You know, you can move your best five around if, God forbid, you have an injury. But that is different than it's done. I would not be surprised if when we get out there for OTAs in a couple weeks, Andrew Wiley takes the first snap at right tackle because he's the vet. He's the incumbent. He's earned that. He's got Super Bowl rings. He played actually pretty darn well last year. So, okay, there's one guy. Coleman, I know that they said they're going to start him at right tackle before they drafted Connerly. But I think they're going to give him a shot. Because why wouldn't you? You have just as much experience at right tackle for Josh Connerly as you do Brandon Coleman, which is zero. Zero. He played it a little bit. Connerly did at the Senior Bowl. It didn't go great, but he played it a little bit. But he's never played it in a real game. He's never played it in any kind of competitive situation. It was just in Senior Bowl practices and maybe a little bit in the Senior Bowl game. So what happens if Brandon Coleman, who is a year older than Josh Connerly, what happens if he's an awesome right tackle? He just takes the position, his athleticism, everything. He sees it better from that side. His feet are more comfortable. For whatever reason, he just rocks at right tackle. And Connerly is like really, really good at left guard. At 29, it's not like they took him at 5. We're not talking about Brandon Sheriff. Oh, he's a guard. We're not talking about that. Just let it play out. And so, again, is the best case scenario that Connerly's playing right tackle? Probably. That Coleman's guard. And could both of them be really special at those positions? I think so. I think the athleticism is there. But the point is, the athleticism is there. The length is there. And Anthony, that's why I think, if they wind up flipped, I'd be surprised if Wiley won the right tackle job. But if one of those, if Coleman winds up being the better right tackle, I'd be surprised, but not shocked, stunned. And it's absolutely going to have a chance to play out that way, based off how they're going to split the reps.
Yeah, and I think that's also what McShay was getting at yesterday. Josh Connerly offers this team flexibility, and that's sort of kind of what Adam Peters and Dan Quinn, they've been trying to, you know, do with this line. One, they're young. Coleman's young. Connerly's young. And even who's out center?
Biotis.
Tyler Biotis. Young as well. And Sam Cosmi as well. So I think in terms of, you know, the foresight that McShay was also talking about, for years to come, we're going to have a fairly young offensive line. You know, Tunsil, he's going to move on, you know, in due time. But
yeah, but for the also, most part, what happens if Tunsil plays till he's 36 years old at a high level? Like, that's 5 years away.
Exactly. So
Daniels will be damn near 30 by then.
Yeah, he will. But yeah, I just think we have the flexibility to do whatever, you know, works out best for our offensive line. If that's Coleman at right tackle and Connerly at guard, then so be it. If it's switched, then so be it. But I think that's why, you know, us going out, getting Connerly, and, you know, just building, fortifying this offensive line is what was going to be best for us in the long run.
It's kind of the antithesis of the conversation that we had earlier, where it's like, man, at linebacker, it better work out with the starters. Otherwise, you're really holding your breath.
Yeah.
Here, it's like, what's the worst case scenario? Your young guys aren't ready, and you got to play a bunch of guys that have played a ton of football.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what happens if all of a sudden, God forbid, the young guys aren't ready, they need a couple of weeks, they need whatever, and Wiley plays right tackle, and Allegretti's at left guard, and Urbig plays right guard? That O-line's not good, but it's like no worse, or not that much worse, than what Cliff had to scheme around last year.
Yep.
Because now all of a sudden Laremy Tunsil's at left tackle instead of a rookie or Cornelius Lucas. So, like, even just getting Tunsil at left tackle, even though you take a hit at right guard with Cosmi down to Nate Urbig in this situation, like, you got a problem because your young guys are not playing well. But hopefully you can get that straightened out within a couple of weeks. But, like, if that's your worst case scenario, like actual professionals playing football for a coach who understands how to scheme around that stuff,
yeah,
there's a lot worse case scenarios.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
Going up. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
All right, to the defense, and everyone, you know, talking about experts and fans. I think in some ways, I actually think it's more fans than experts, although I have heard a couple. I almost lost my mind. I heard Derek Klassen the other day say, like, the Commanders' defense up front is worse than last year. And I was just like, how could you possibly say that they're worse when they're mostly the same players and then they added a bunch of really solid dudes and got rid of a guy in John Allen who barely played last year? And then, yes, Dante Fowler, but, like, their biggest problem was stopping the run, and Fowler was one of the big guys in charge of that. Anyway, a lot of fans, though. Why could they not possibly address edge? Well, we asked if Commanders were making, or pundits were making the same mistake as they made with the offensive line last year, where it's like, no. If you add competent pieces and a good coach, can you make this unit work, even if it doesn't have top-tier stud talent? Escaped 1534 says, yes, the run defense should be much better, which will set up more third and longs for the opposing team. That means more sack opportunities. They had 43 sacks last season. They'll probably have more this year. Kaiser Soze 540 says, sacks are overrated. The Eagles, Lions, Chiefs, and Bills were all lower than Washington last year in sacks. What do you notice about those teams? Sacks are a funny stat when you talk to about them in an analytics sense, Anthony, because there are some like EPA data that's like sacks are more valuable than turnovers. And I'm like, that seems a bit silly, but they are so detrimental to drives that teams have a hard time overcoming them. And because they affect field position, like where you turn the football over might not can limit the damage. A sack by nature sets you back in a major way that you probably are not going to take a sack on a drive where you're then going to be able to get pinned deep the other way. And a lot of times field position is a huge indicator of your potential success on a drive. So that plays with, no, it's manipulating the EPA formula in a way, but like it's worth mentioning. That said, there's also the very simple fact that the Eagles, Lions, Chiefs, Bills, according to this comment that I definitely didn't fact check, were lower in sacks than the Commanders last year, and they were just fine defensively. And they were some of the best teams, in fact, in the entire NFL. Three of the four finalist teams. Of course, Washington was the other, and then Detroit was the team that Washington beat to get there. So I think what's important, though, is when those sacks come and the pressure you can generate. And that's the thing. On what do you also notice about specifically the Eagles and the Chiefs and the healthy version of the Lions? The healthy version of the Lions is Aiden Hutchinson. The Eagles have Jalen Carter. The Chiefs have Chris Jones. Those guys, in big moments, get home. And even the Lions last year for a lot of the season, they were able to generate pressure and their back end was so good coverage-wise that they were able to generate pressure in key situations. So to me, it's about can you reliably have something that is an ace in the hole on third down? Can you, first of all, stop the run well enough to get into those third and long situations? And then can you have something where an offensive coordinator can't just call some deep developing route down the field and hang your secondary out to dry? And for the Chiefs and Eagles, it's, yeah, Chris Jones and Jalen Carter are going to get pressure. For the Lions, they were able to scheme stuff up and they were super aggressive in their calls, and we'll see what they are without Aaron Glenn moving forward. Bills, it was a bit of an outlier in terms of that, and they struggled at times to get off the field on third down. But I think that, the actual sack number can definitely be overrated. Robert Borgeson, 1821 says, Anthony, we have four quality starting D linemen on the roster, as well as a beast of a hybrid off-ball edge linebacker, talking about Luvu. Then we have some young guys as well as a couple designated pass rusher types. Aside from having a game-wrecking superstar, I don't think you could ask for a whole lot more. DQ and Witt might have to go get a little creative on based off the lack of traditional body types for certain roles, but we have already seen them do that. I'm not saying we will lead the league in sacks, but I have a feeling everything is going to be just fine, especially now with QBs becoming more and more mobile. Pressure needs to come from inside, and your edge guys need to contain. We have a very strong foundation to do exactly that. And that's the other part, right? Their best pass rushers are interior. It's Javon Kinlaw rushing from the inside, Daron Payne, who once had a monster sack season, but has consistently been a good pressure guy in his career. And then let's see what year two of Johnny Newton is. To me, Newton's the key cog in all this, Ant. If he takes a huge step, this defensive line could be really good. If he doesn't, and he's just, you know, what he was last year, they'll be hopefully okay with the other additions that they've made.
Yeah, I mean, I think interior pressure is super important. Tom Brady always talks about it, even when he was playing, how he hated when teams were able to get pressure up the middle. So if Newton and Kinlaw are winning up front, that's going to allow for the Luvus and the Dorrance Armstrongs and the Dietrich Wise of the world to possibly be able to get off. So, again, like, it's all complimentary, but it's going to start up front the interior anyway.
And it starts with those edge guys compressing, right? So there's no escape hatch.
Yeah.
If you can get out, because you have – this is why, like, I'm not trying to pick on the Falcons here, but, like, James Pierce Jr., right? Who they took, and you know, we lost it over the trade and everything. Like, part of the reason why I don't like James Pierce Jr. here, and maybe he works out there, maybe he works out for Atlanta. Raheem's a great coach. He's a high side rusher. He's a guy that's like, I am going to get way up the field. And that doesn't work as well in the modern NFL because they just tackles are like, fine, I'll wash you 15 yards up the field, and now my quarterback has an escape hatch. Where Dietrich Wise is like, I am going to run through your chest plate trying to get to the quarterback, and if he tries to get out, I have the strength to be able to discard you out of the way because I can see and you can't. You're blocking blind. And then I'll go flush him out, you know, high side and hopefully get a sack, if not force a throwaway or force a scramble situation, which hopefully we can contain and our back end does the job. So I think that the solidness of it is what gets me excited. And the sack, like the lack of a big time edge name is fine. I will say this. Jadeveon Clowney got released today. I'm intrigued. I think he has had a history of, like, he's a big body type, sets a great edge, never was the sack guy that he was thought to be coming out of South Carolina. And that was obviously a long time ago. But if you want to add another piece who just like knows how to play, and I think from a physicality standpoint can do some stuff that they want their edges to do, I'm intrigued in Jadeveon Clowney. He did have a career high in sacks in Baltimore like 2 years ago. So it's not that far removed. The last thing I'll say on the defensive line front, Anthony, they also might do some different stuff this year than we've seen. I think there's a lot of teams around the league that, based off the free agent moves they made and the draft picks they made, I'm like, I don't think you're drafting to the same, even if it's the same coordinator, I don't know that you're drafting to the same scheme that you had last year. Like, the Donovan Jackson picked in Minnesota. Like, he wouldn't have fit on Minnesota's offensive line last year. I think O'Connell's going to try some different stuff in the run game this year. And the guy like Donovan Jackson fits the new stuff. Your boy, Eddie Goldman, Javon Kinlaw, Dietrich, these guys can play in a true 3-4. So, getting Frankie out on the edge, Jacob Martin would be on the other one. Dorrance can stand up. Like, are they still going to play plenty of four down? Yes. Are they going to play more three down this year? And they played some hybrid kind of 3-4 with 4-3 spacing last year. I think we might see some true 3-4 with Eddie Goldman as a nose tackle. And, you know, again, 4-eye. So your inside shade of the, or your inside shoulder of the tackle, or sorry, outside shoulder of the guard, like true 3-4 alignments this year. So, you know, schematically, they've got some things up their sleeve too. All right, last thing, or last two topics here. Gary B, 7193 chimed in, Anthony, on the draft coming to DC. Hosting the 2027 NFL draft will generate hundreds of millions of dollars in total spending for DC and the surrounding areas. Detroit invested $10 million for this year's draft, generating $213 million in total spending, while Kansas City spent $3 million in 2023, generating $102 million in direct spending in the city's economy. The NFL bringing the 2027 draft to DC allows the city to get back roughly 20% of the dollars that they're investing in the stadium project and infrastructure. Of course, the use of new stadium for year-round events will bring its own set of returns on investment to DC for years to come. Here's what I would tell Gary and everybody else listening and watching. It's okay for us not to pretend like we're economists. I don't think any of these numbers might be right in that they were pulled from somewhere. The context doesn't make any sense to me. Like, when you hear the money generated by a city, that doesn't necessarily mean direct to the city. It could be by the city's businesses, which is mostly money in the private sector, which, okay, fine, that money becomes taxable in whether it's income taxes, property taxes, whatever. Like, some of that then redirects into the city. But, like, economics are too complicated for any of us to pretend like we understand them. And unless Gary's an economist, in which case, Gary B. 7193, I'm so sorry. But these numbers get thrown around, and I think both by economists who occasionally want to make the case that stadiums are bad investments, and that's certainly probably correct in terms of direct ROI, but I've talked to some of these economists, and it doesn't account for other factors. The joy that it brings to go to football games, the fact that football games have to be played somewhere, and not everything is meant to be. Sometimes you spend money to get stuff, not because you're spending, not everything is an investment, right? And how some of these numbers get presented by, like, folks in the mayor's office, for instance, is because they want to sell a good story. So here's what I would tell Gary and everyone else. be very skeptical of any number you see around this project. Like, try your best to understand, if you really want to get into it, try your best to understand where the numbers come from, what context they exist in. But be skeptical of everything and learn how to ask the right questions and read smart people, because the idea that Detroit invested $10 million and they generated $213 million, that doesn't add up in my head. All right, last but not least, Anthony, need you for these two. First and foremost, we talked about whether or not, so in August, I will have been in Washington, D.C. for 10 years. So coming up on my 10-year anniversary of living in the city, or living in the region, I should say. Anthony, what? Oh, I see what's going on. Never mind. I thought you were about to drop some other new beat on me.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we've been talking too long. So in August, it'll be 10 years since I moved to D.C., and we were debating whether or not then I can call myself a Washingtonian. And I said, that's for other people to decide. That's not my thing. You get a vote as someone who's born and raised here. But Guitar Gangster 23 says, Craig, you can be a Washingtonian. If anybody has a problem with it, they can find me.
Okay.
So per Guitar Gangster, the unmitigated source of all things, or the unquestioned source of this power, you got a problem, you can find him. And then Todd Pierce 47 says, yeah, Craig, you're one of us. You invited to the cookout.
Which, okay.
Look, I know that is the highest compliment I can receive.
That is very high.
I mean, Todd, let me know where the cookout's at. I am there, my guy.
Hey, Craig, when you pull up, just ask for Uncle Tony. That's all you got to do.
Yeah, Uncle Tony was in the chat today again, by the way, commenting on your shirt. Which is not the only comment we've gotten on your shirt. Last but not least, Anthony, you were wearing that Washington old school polo the other day.
I did have an old school polo.
It was an extra schmedium. And someone I think liked it because it had the old logo and whatever. And BJ3 says Anthony's polo and gave you like the nice emoji. But then there's GS8291, Anthony, who said Anthony's arms and said polo. Heart eye emojis.
That's hilarious. Heart eye emoji is crazy.
Yeah, I mean, you've been working out. Oh, hit him with the flex.
See, look, not too much. Not too much.
GI, I hope you're watching this one too. And she's gonna hit the pause button right when you flex. Hitting it right there. That's why we read the comments. When we get back, Logan and I talking about Josh Connerly Jr., take command style, here on The Hoffman Show.
Podcasting isn't just evolving. It's having a full-blown identity crisis. I'm Allison Marino, host of What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined, a new series that pulls back the curtain on the forces shaping the medium now and what that means for all of us who love podcasts. I'm really excited to share the official trailer where you'll hear from some of the biggest names in the space. Ira Glass, Leo Laporte, Guy Raz, Hernan Lopez, Lex Friedman, AJ Feliciano, Dan Granger, and yeah, me too. Here it is now.
I still want to kill the word podcast.
That's not just a hot take. It's a symptom of an identity crisis.
Big company run media, and people are trusting it less and less. It's really important that we're independent.
There's a handful of companies that control the vast majority of podcast inventory that have the vast majority of the gigantic shows.
We left radio behind for a reason. We wanted to get away from all the gatekeepers.
I don't know that you could do this as effectively in video.
Podcasting is at a crossroads. I've watched the industry swing from hype to consolidation to reinvention. But this time it's different. From the producers of the documentary Age of Audio, Oxford Road presents the Media Roundtable special series. What's a podcast? The Revolution Redefined.
All of us who work in the media, like, yeah, we got to run a business and like, we got to make a living and we got to sell our ads and we got to do all that. But we all got into it because like, I think most of us, like, it just gave us a feeling.
A three-part series where you'll hear the leading industry voices give their takes on what podcasting has become and where it's headed next. Teaming up with Oxford Road and Age of Audio director Sean Colon for this series was fun, but also kind of a wake-up call. If you love this medium as much as I do, you've got to listen to What's a Podcast? The Revolution Redefined. It's out now, wherever you get your podcasts.